Brother John's second discourse is entitled, An Example to Others. An Example to Others. Brother John.
Thank you, Brother Tom. In the event that anyone's here that wasn't this morning, it's the tradition of our ecclesia to send a scripture along with their greetings to you. And so I'll reread that scripture. It's Proverbs 8:17. I love them that love me, and those that seek me diligently shall find me. I thought that it would be interesting to talk about something that begins when we are born, continues throughout our entire lives, and affects every one of us. I probably could guess many things of what that could be. I'll narrow it down. It's the learning process. Everyone is in this process. No one ever outgrows it. It begins when we discover what makes us comfortable and how to get it. We are thinking only of ourselves, and we generally get it by crying. As we become more aware of our surroundings, we begin to observe and experiment with what others are doing and how they react to life. It doesn't take very long for us to discover the two major ways the process of learning takes place. First-hand experience and the lessons that are taught by others through our observations and study of them. So we would ask, why are lessons and experiences important? Well, because they do provide an opportunity to learn and to grow from them and to realize that they are preparing us for something that's in the future. At first, we learn how to please ourselves, as we said. Then we learn it's a good idea to please our parents. And then our teachers, our friends, our work associates. But it is not until we realize the true sign of progress is learning what is pleasing to God. Have you noticed that sometimes your experiences and your lessons, you learn them right away? You catch on right away. And yet there are other experiences that you seem to have to do over and over again. This reality doesn't seem to change throughout our lives. Although the lessons do, the process does not. It's true when we're young, and it remains true while we progress through the maturing process. One thing we can be sure of is that we will never outgrow the need to continue in the learning process. This afternoon, we're going to be examining the experiences of others, but not just anybody. We'll be looking at those whose actions and reactions were pleasing to God. We'll be reviewing some scriptures that tell the story of deception, of rejection, false accusations, punishment for righteousness' sake, faithfulness and character development. We'll be focusing our experiences today on Joseph and his family. We will trace their experiences with three objectives in mind. We're going to observe the character and reactions to their experiences and how we can effectively apply those lessons to our future experiences. We're going to reflect on our past experiences and think about how God's hand was involved in our lives. And we'll make some comparisons between the life of Joseph and the experiences of Jesus. The lessons of Joseph begin with his father, Jacob. Now, we're going to be summarizing many scriptures in the book of Genesis. We won't be reading them word for word. We'll be summarizing them and fitting them into the discussion. We're going to start in chapter 29, verses 10 through 14. And you'll recall at this point, Rachel, the daughter of Laban, who is Jacob's uncle, was waiting by the well to water her father's sheep. And when Jacob saw Rachel, he rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and he watered his uncle's sheep. And then Jacob went and he kissed Rachel. And he began to weep out loud. He told Rachel that he was a relative of her father, and so she ran to tell him. When Laban heard the news, he hurried to meet Jacob. He embraced him, he kissed him, and he brought him into his home. And then Laban said, "You are my own flesh and blood." Now at this point, Laban welcomed Jacob. He made him feel very comfortable. No doubt trying to perhaps win his confidence. We continue with Laban saying, "Well, just because you're a relative, should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be." Now, Laban, if you recall, had two daughters. The older was Leah, the younger Rachel. And Jacob loved Rachel and said, "I will work for you 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel." And Laban said, "Well, it's better that I give her to you than to some other man. Why don't you stay?" And so Jacob did. And he served 7 years for Rachel. Now let's review that transaction. Laban suggests to pay Jacob, which seems to be fair and just. Jacob makes his offer. Laban accepts it. Jacob performs faithfully, and he has every right to expect the hand of Rachel. However, instead of Jacob receiving the reward of his faithfulness, he's about to see the true character of Laban. Now, Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife. My time is complete. I want to be with her." So Laban brought together all the people and gave a feast. And when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and gave her to Jacob. And Jacob lie with her. And it wasn't until morning that Jacob discovered the deception. And he goes to Laban, "What have you done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why, have you deceived me?" And Laban said, "Well, it's not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older." Now, it's not clear if Laban planned this deception from the very beginning. But if the verse that tells us about the custom is the reason, I think we can be fairly certain that Laban didn't just find out about that the night before. Whatever the case, the results are the same. His true character was exposed. He lied to Jacob. Like Jacob and Laban, we can be expected to be tested by the Lord. And faithfulness is not proven without the opportunity to fail. Our testing will not be only academic. Our testing will be the result of our opportunity to choose and to act upon the correct path. Now in verses 27 and 28, Laban now comes and makes another offer. Well, finish this daughter's bridal week, then we will give you the younger one also. Ah, in return for another 7 years, of course. So Jacob did so. And then Laban gave his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban's deception was complete. He used Jacob's love for Rachel to gain 7 more years of service. On the other hand, Jacob's character was also exposed. Was he treated justly? No. Was he deceived? Was he taken advantage of? I think we could say yes. Yet he accepted the experience. He did not complain. He did not react with bitterness or seek revenge. He didn't even demand justice. Can we always expect to be treated justly? Or maybe a better question is, have you always been treated justly? Consider the times of injustice as opportunities to put our trust in the Lord, to claim His promises and look for the intent of the lessons that have been set before us. Remember, in every experience, you have a choice of how to react and what aspect of your character, whether it be positive or negative, will be manifested and further developed. Characters exposed in the field of day-to-day living. It's not isolated or protected in a classroom environment. 3 things to note of Jacob's character that we can apply and we need to learn. His character allowed him to accept his experiences and maintain a positive attitude even after an unjust act was committed against him. And he gave God the credit for the results. In verse 30 of chapter 30, this is when Jacob was asking Laban to leave the household. He said, "The little that you had before I came has increased greatly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I have been." Jacob is giving God the credit for his good fortune. Now, at this point, our story turns more directly to Joseph. And you'll recall that Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah and favored the children of Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin, but especially Joseph. We read that Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. And when his brothers saw that, the father loved him more than any of them, they hated him. And they couldn't speak a kind word to him. And of course, to further add to that situation, Joseph has 2 dreams. And he explains them by saying, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while yours gathered around me and bowed down to me." His brother said, "Well, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of this dream and what he had said. Then he went on to say, "Well, I had another dream. This time the sun, the moon, the 11 stars were bowing down to me." And when he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous, envious of him. But his father kept this in mind. Now, at this point, the telling of this dream serves to show the character of his brothers and provides a knowledge point for his brothers to recall later on in our story. Recall the words we said when we said his brethren, his brothers envied him. What does envy mean? It's a feeling of discontent, resentment, that arouses when another's desired possession qualities desires their possessions and the qualities with a strong desire to have it for themselves. In Galatians, the fifth chapter, verses 25 and 26, we see what envy is. "Envy and the like, I warn you, as I did before, that those who live like this will not inherit the kingdom of God. Since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking, and envying each other." The scriptures are clear. We should not be envious. And if we have the slightest tendency toward envy, we need to treat it as an enemy. An enemy that, if allowed to grow and manifest itself, will lead to the undesirable condition we just described. Okay. Now we have Jacob sending Joseph to his brethren in the field where they're tending the flock. But before Joseph reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Come, let's kill him. We'll throw him in one of those cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." Now, when Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands by saying, "Well, let's not take his life." But look what envy and hatred had accomplished in the hearts of Joseph's brother. All of them except Reuben wanted to kill him. Reuben lacked the courage to stand up to stop them, but he did not have the hardness of heart to allow them to kill him. And we read of Reuben's plan when he said, "Don't shed any blood. Let's just throw him in one of those cisterns here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him." Now, Reuben said this because it was his plan to come back and rescue him and to take him to his father. Do you think that Joseph was a willing party to their brother's plan? We're going to read slightly ahead in chapter 42, verse 21. We're going to come back to it later. But at this point, we read this just to set the scene. And the scene here is where later on, you recall, Joseph accuses his brothers of being spies. And they're talking amongst themselves. They say to each other, "Surely we're being punished because of our brother. We saw him distressed when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why the distress is coming upon us now." Now, again, we're reading this just to show that Joseph didn't willingly climb into the pit. He resisted. He cried out. But his brothers wouldn't hear him. They didn't want any part of it. Now, it's one thing for us to think a thought. And perhaps any one of us may have had an evil thought when we've been mistreated. But it's yet another thing to begin to act on it. And it's yet another thing to follow through with it, ignoring the pleading of your brothers. That is the power of envy and the grip it had on his brothers. Now, you'll recall that the plan changed. Under Judah's direction, Joseph is sold to merchants going to Egypt. And we read that when Reuben returned, he saw that Joseph was gone. He wasn't there. And he ripped his clothes. And he went back to his brothers and he said, "The boy isn't there. What can I turn to now?" Well, Reuben returned. When he discovered Joseph was gone, he was upset. Why would he be upset? Well, you remember his plan. He was going to rescue Joseph. He was going to take him back to his father. But now, Joseph's gone. He can't do that anymore. He's very distressed here. His lack of courage to stand for righteousness leads to another weakness of the flesh on his part. Instead of dealing with the truth, he and his brothers now must develop a lie and a deception to cover their actions in order to be able to face their father. And you know, the thing about a lie, it never gets easier to live with it. Lies seem to beget lies. Seeking forgiveness for our weaknesses is much easier. It's more pleasing to God. Never be afraid to confront the Lord. He strengthens a tender heart. At this point, let's make some comparisons between the life of Joseph and the experiences of Jesus. Jesus was the firstborn of his father. Joseph was the firstborn of his father's true love, Rachel. Joseph was sent to his brethren and rejected. Jesus was sent to his brethren and rejected, as was Joseph sent to his brethren and rejected. Jesus was killed by his brethren. Joseph was figuratively killed when he was put in the pit by his brethren. It was their intent to rid themselves of him. Jesus was resurrected from the dead, and Joseph was removed from the pit and given life. If we are confronted with hard experiences, which we will be, remember, our God is the keeper of his promises. Now, what do you think is the most valuable quality of a promise giver? Why, it certainly has to be their ability to keep the promise. Without this, promises are just nice stories. They're just rhetoric. But God's promises are true. And he will keep them. Think about this promise and believe it. If God is for you, who could be against you? And I would just add, perhaps a word, who could prevail against you? Because there could be a lot of powers and forces against you. But none will prevail without the Lord's permission. Do you think that our experiences are without guidance or without a purpose? Hebrews 12:10-11. God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Remember, we said the best way to learn lessons is firsthand. What method has the Lord chosen to teach us firsthand? Of all the ways in the world, he's chosen one way. Trial and error. He teaches us by trial and error. He provides an experience, but we must choose the answer, the solution, and the way that we will handle that experience. Can this method expect perfection? Think about that. My conclusion is no. It can't expect perfection. But remember, this is the way the Lord has chosen to teach. Remember that overcoming is not being successful. That sounds strange. You will never achieve perfection. It's striving for perfection with imperfect tools and loving the Lord with all of your heart. Remember the great commandment given by the Lord when he said, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, all thy soul, and all thy mind." Well, let's get back to Joseph. Now, Joseph's taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar purchases him from the merchants who have taken him there. Now, the Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything that he did, Potiphar put him in charge of his entire household. And he entrusted him to the care, to Joseph's care for everything that he owned. Now, do you think that happened by chance? The Lord was with Joseph. Joseph was blessed. Our lesson can be stated in Romans 8:28. And we know that all things God works for the good of those that love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Potiphar saw that God was with Joseph and that his house was blessed because of Joseph. Joseph had earned his trust, and in return, Potiphar placed all that he had in the hands of Joseph. Now, comparing Joseph with Jesus, consider the Heavenly Father's trust. He placed in Jesus in charge of all of creation and the restitution work of mankind. Now, Joseph was doing his part very well. He was trusting in the Lord's provision for him. This is achieved by his acceptance and trusting with what the Lord was providing him. We need to do that too. We need to trust what the Lord has provided for us. With acceptance of your experiences comes an understanding of the purpose of those experiences. The purpose is to learn, to be taught, developed, without always knowing what the Lord has in mind. Trust is really the key. Remember, Jesus wants those that are teachable. Once a lesson is learned, other experiences and further development can then be introduced. The growth of the new creature is a process. It's not a single event that occurs suddenly. Now, the Lord must have believed that Joseph was ready for more development because he's about to be tested farther. In Genesis 39, the verses of 7 to 20, we summarize, this is where Potiphar's wife desires Joseph. And she invites him to lie with her. And Joseph refuses. And after a bit of time going by, she tries again. And Joseph refuses again. But Potiphar's wife now becomes frustrated and tells Potiphar, "That Hebrew slave that you brought us came to me and tried to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he dropped his cloak and he ran out of the house." Well, you can imagine Potiphar reacted with anger. And within moments, Joseph went from being in charge of everything to being in prison. This must have been difficult for both Joseph and Potiphar. Potiphar trusted Joseph with everything. And Joseph did absolutely nothing wrong. But again, the Lord was with Joseph. And he granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those that were held in prison. Now, can you imagine the keeper of a jail putting a prisoner in charge of everyone? Is that logical? Joseph had been falsely accused. He's put in prison and again given an opportunity to accept yet another experience from the Lord without being able to see the future. What he did not know was that he was being prepared for even a greater job. What we know is that our lessons will work to our benefit when we accept them from the Lord, follow His principles, and understand that they too are for a greater purpose. Remember, we left Joseph in prison. Now, could he have been discouraged? Could he have been a bit confused, bitter, maybe even angry? He had done nothing wrong. Absolutely nothing. As a matter of fact, he stood for righteousness. A question for us to ponder. Is it proper to conclude God's degree of favor toward us by the circumstances we find ourselves in? How great is your faith? Can you trust where you can't see? Can you trust when circumstances take a turn for what appears to be the worst? Let's review Joseph's experience so far. He's the favored son of his father Jacob. He's sold into slavery by his envious brothers. He's purchased and earns the respect and favor of his master, Potiphar. He's elevated to oversee all of his goods. He's imprisoned after being falsely accused. And then he earns the respect and favor of the jailer. So what has Joseph done to deserve all of this? Well, our answer could be absolutely nothing. Or it could be absolutely everything. It all depends on an attitude. What's our viewpoint? If we look at the experiences that he was having as unfortunate, you will think he's doing nothing to deserve this unfair treatment. But if you look at these experiences as development necessary to reach the Lord's desired outcome, you will think he has done everything to deserve his experiences. If Joseph had not trusted the Lord and accepted his lot, the Lord would not have been able to use him and develop him for his purpose. Was it not the same for Jesus? Is it not the same for you? Continuing with Joseph, we find the king of Egypt is offended by his cupbearer and chief baker. Pharaoh put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard. And the captain of the guard assigns them to Joseph. And he attends them. This situation opens up a way that we'll see how the three dealt with each other. And it also shows us another side of Joseph's character. When Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. And he asked them, "Why are your faces so sad today?" Joseph observed their demeanor, their appearance, and he asked about it. Even in his time of trial, he was compassionate for others. This is a remarkable character trait, to be supportive of others during your own distress. Was it not the same for Jesus, caring for others in his moment of distress, the night of his crucifixion? Are not both examples to us to be aware of our brethren? Do we observe our brethren well enough to tell when there's something different going on in their lives? Do we allow our brethren to know us well enough? Are we willing to share our experiences? Is it enough to just greet our brethren each week with a simple, "Hello, how are you?" Do we know enough about each other to know how to help them, to know what to pray for in them? Okay, the cupbearer, he gets some good news. He's about to have some good news. And we read, "We both had this dream, but no one could interpret it. And then Joseph said to them, 'Well, do not interpretations belong to God? You can tell your dreams to me.' So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream. And Joseph said, 'This is what it means. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position, and you will be put back in favor with Pharaoh.'" Now, the interpretation for the baker's dream didn't have the same results. "This is what it means for you," Joseph said. "The three baskets are also 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat away your flesh." 3 days came. Joseph's interpretations were true, became a reality for the cupbearer and the baker. But even though Joseph requested the cupbearer to remember him to the Pharaoh, he did not. And Joseph has to continue to wait on the Lord. 2 additional years passed before the cupbearer finally remembers about Joseph. Together with that time and the time he'd already been in prison, he was there for parts of 3 years in prison. He was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, beginning of the experiences of saving the known world. Jesus was 30 years old when he began his experience to save the world of mankind by carrying out God's plan to redeem fallen man. So you recall, Pharaoh has the dream. None of his magicians could interpret it. Now the butler remembers Joseph. So Pharaoh sends for Joseph. Joseph, giving God the credit, interprets the dream, saying, "I cannot do so, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." He predicts 7 years of great plenty, 7 years of famine. Joseph lays out a work plan to save the world from death caused by famine. Now, at this point, Pharaoh is very perceptive, demonstrates tremendous wisdom. He needs somebody to be put in charge to save his people. He knew God was with Joseph. So he gave the job to Joseph. And Pharaoh says, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one discerning and as wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace. All of my people are submitted to your orders, and only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. In John 5:22-23, our Heavenly Father has a similar statement of trust about Jesus, where he says, moreover, the Father judges no one, but has entrusted all judgment to the Son, that all may honor the Son just as they honor the Father. Joseph's new position is next to the Pharaoh. Jesus' exalted position is right next to the Heavenly Father. As God's plan is fulfilled, Jesus will be the life giver to the world. Mankind will have a chance to enjoy everlasting, perfect human life as a result of his ransom sacrifice, which provides the opportunity for life. And the resurrection work of the Christ, head and body, will provide the guidance, direction, and instruction needed to make a success of this opportunity. Well, just as Joseph predicted, the famine was over all the face of the earth and set the stage for the next step of our story. Joseph opened the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, and all the countries came to Egypt to buy grain because the famine was severe and in all of the world. So much that it extended that Jacob sent 10 of his sons to Egypt for food. He would not send Benjamin. He wouldn't send Benjamin with the others because he was afraid that harm might come to him. When his brothers arrived, Joseph recognized them, but they didn't know Joseph. When they bowed before Joseph, Joseph reminded himself of his earlier dreams. Joseph did not reveal himself, but instead he accused them of being spies. His brothers, of course, denied this, but Joseph wouldn't accept his claim, their claims. So Joseph begins a series of tests to see what time had done to the character of his brothers. And he said, this is how you will be tested, speaking to his brothers. You will not leave this place until your younger brother comes here. He suggested to let one return and bring Benjamin back to Egypt to test their story. But then he put them all in prison for 3 days. And after this, he told them, just leave one behind. And the rest go for Benjamin. And if you return, then I'll believe you. Well, now who's being falsely accused? His brothers are being falsely accused. Remember we read in 42:21-22, we were reading about how his brothers Joseph was distressed when their brothers were putting him in the pit. Well, now we're going to read it to show their brothers' regret. This is the beginning of the evidence showing his brothers had made progress. They acknowledged guilt and accountability for what they had done to Joseph. They said one to another, surely we're being punished because of our brother. Now we must give an accounting for his blood. Joseph understood what they were saying, but his brothers didn't know that. Seeing the character improvement in his brothers, Joseph separated himself and began to weep. Simon was chosen, was bound in front of the others, And Joseph set up the next test. He ordered their sacks filled, each man's silver restored, provisions provided for the trip. But later, the brothers discovered the silver, and they feared for what happened, what might happen to them. They returned, the nine of them, returned to Jacob and told him of this. They said, "The Lord of Egypt took us for spies. They bound Simon before us and ordered us to bring Benjamin back to prove we are not spies." But Jacob's response was, "You have deprived me of my children. Joseph's gone. Simeon's gone. Now you want to take Benjamin. Everything seems to be against me." Reuben came forward and staked his life, the life of his two sons, that he would make sure Benjamin would be returned safely. But Jacob said, "No, my son will not go there. His brother is dead, and he's the only one left." But time and the continued famine forced Jacob to reconsider. And so he said, "Go back, buy us more food." But Judah reminded Jacob, "We can't go back without Benjamin. We were warned." Jacob, showing his frustration, asked the question, "Why did you bring this trouble on me by telling them you had a brother?" Jacob is fighting with his flesh. He doesn't want to lose Benjamin. So Judah steps forward, accepts the responsibility for Benjamin's safety. Jacob does finally agree and tells them to take double the money to pay for the first grain. When Joseph sees his brothers and Benjamin, he orders a meal so that they might eat together. Now, this frightened the brothers. This is not a very usual experience for the Lord of Egypt to dine with common Hebrews. So the brothers, thinking they were in trouble, went to Joseph Stewart and explained the original money that was returned to them. We were bringing it back. We're going to buy more. We have double the money. But the steward said, "It's okay." He assured them it would be okay. Remember, these are the men that accepted money to sell Joseph into slavery, which was an act of hatred, an act of greed, selfishness on their part. Now they acknowledge the found money and offer to pay back that money plus more money for the food. His brothers are making progress. His brothers are examples of the feasibility of the degraded, sinful world of mankind returning to the character required to have everlasting life in the kingdom. But one final test. One more test. Joseph again orders the sacks filled, the money returned, and this time his cup is put in Benjamin's sack. Joseph orders them stopped as they're leaving and accuses them of returning evil for good and stealing his silver cup. They say, "We did nothing. We brought back the money." And the brothers make the following arrangement. "If any of your servants is found to have the cup, he will die. And the rest of us will become my Lord's slaves." This statement of their character is a strong statement of their belief that none of them would do anything wrong. They stake their lives and their futures on that. Well, you know, the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Now, can you imagine how they must have felt? They had just set the rules that would result in the death of Benjamin. and putting all of them into slavery. Well, they rent their clothes. They were very upset. Why? Why would they be upset? After all, this was Joseph's full brother, Benjamin, also a favored son. Didn't they think the same of Benjamin as they did of Joseph? Well, their actions don't seem to indicate that. Doesn't seem that as though they harbored the same character that permitted them to rid themselves of Joseph. They were being tested in the field. And they were acting in love this time, not envy as they did before. Well, what happens when Joseph finds out? We read that he said to them, "What is this you have done? Don't you know that I have ways of finding these things out?" And they replied, "What can we say, my Lord? What can we say? How can we prove our innocence? God has uncovered your servant's guilt." But Joseph said, "Far be it from me to do such a thing. Only the man who has the cup will become my slave." Remember, the original agreement was far different than this. "The rest of you can go back to your father in peace." Now, this is the same group of brothers that sold Joseph into slavery. So this ought to be really easy for them. They're being given a major opportunity here. Remember the agreement? All would be slaves. The one with the cup would die. Now they're offered freedom, and Benjamin just has to become a slave. But his life is spared. Remember this about Benjamin. He's the full brother of Joseph. Benjamin was favored, as we said. And all they would have to do is make up another story for Jacob, and they would save their own lives. But this is not the case this time. Judah goes to Joseph. He explains all the details about his father and his commitment to his father and his love for him. He offers himself to be a slave for Benjamin's freedom. The ultimate test: to offer yourself for another. Judah's concern for his father and for Joseph. He was not concerned for himself. Joseph had the proof he needed. And then Joseph could no longer control himself before all of his attendants. And he cried out, "Have everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. When he said, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified in his presence. Then Joseph said, "Come close to me. I'm your brother, Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt," as though they needed to be reminded of that. "And now, do not be distressed. And do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me here ahead of you." Can you imagine the shock on his brothers' faces when they realized the power Joseph had over them at this point? But Joseph's character continues to come through when he says, "God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household and ruler of all Egypt." Joseph is minimizing what they had done to him. And he states that it was God that sent him ahead. This is also a picture of Jesus, who was sent before to prepare and purchase the fallen race and provide an opportunity for both the church and the entire world of mankind. Joseph says to them to tell their father to come to Egypt. So they do. They tell Jacob. At first, Jacob does not believe his sons. Now, what would you say? He now realized that his sons have deceived him all these years. That that Joseph's really alive, and that the story that they told him was just a lie. Jacob does decide to go to Egypt to see Joseph and to live out his entire life there. And God assures him that it is the right thing to do when he says, God spoke to Jacob in a vision at night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he responded, I am here. I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation. So let us summarize some of the key points. We have concluded that the learning process through your personal experiences and the observation of others is a necessary part of the Christian life. And although firsthand experience is probably the most effective way of learning, we can certainly get many benefits from the observation of others. We have examined the lives and experiences of Joseph and his family. We have learned that the Lord can direct our experiences and will work things to his end if we are willing to trust him and to depend upon him for our strength and our development. We've also learned that improvement can be achieved through the learning process, as demonstrated by Joseph's brothers, who went from wanting to kill and murder their brother to being willing to sacrifice themselves to save the life of their brother. Brethren, look forward to your experiences. Look forward to your lessons. They're designed for you. They have a purpose, and they are working toward God's goal. Remember, the lessons you are learning today are preparing you for tomorrow's future, a future the world is waiting for. And you have the privilege of not only knowing about it, but also being a part of it. May the Lord add his blessing.